Glenn Beck.
Strategic bombers were flying over South Korea yesterday. Two B-1 Lancers flanked by Japanese and South Korean fighter jets buzzed North Korea in yet another show of force yesterday. Perhaps the weirdest thing about all of this is how routine all of this is beginning to feel. This wasn't an elaborate air show or even, you know, a recon mission to take pictures. This was a mission to deter against nuclear war. Are we even following this anymore? The tough talk and the saber rattling between Kim Jong-un and President Trump has become so common, it's easy to miss just how close to war we literally get every single day. Yesterday, take this for example. It was the 72nd anniversary of the founding of North Korea's ruling Workers' Party. Kim Jong-un typically uses these holidays to have, you know, those big, you know, parades where, hey, look at all of our cool missiles. And look, we can get everybody to wear a hat and it will spell out something like happy anniversary to us. But he also uses it for nuclear missile tests. And the last threat we heard was a possible hydrogen bomb test over the Pacific. Now, Trump has set the stage just last week when he said, we're at the calm before the storm. And everybody began to wonder, what does that mean, Mr. President? Friday, the press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she confirmed that there were world issues. And that world issue, namely, was North Korea. Over the weekend, Trump doubled down and gave an ominous tweet. He said, you know, democracy hadn't worked for 25 years and that, quote, only one thing will work. So now, early yesterday morning, he called for a meeting with the defense secretary, Mattis, and secretary of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they discussed, quote, a range of options to respond militarily to North Korea aggression. Now, they've had these planning sessions 100 times since the crisis began. Why'd they pick Tuesday morning for another one? And then just a few hours later, B-1 bombers and Japanese and South Korean fighter jets are flying over the Korean Peninsula. Was it a show of force, or are we getting close to waiting for an attack order? The threat of war with North Korea is greater than it has been in 50 years, and Kim Jong-un apparently got the message yesterday and backed down. Will he continue to back down? Next time.
It's Wednesday, October 11th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
In the midst of twin medical crises, the 2016 presidential campaign was in full swing, and I was a conservative who didn't support Donald Trump. Protesters showed up at our home. People sent us hate mail. They called my office daily demanding that I be fired. Everybody was convinced I had destroyed my career. Our house had to be protected by guards. My two children were yelled at in the store by an angry man who was angry with me for not supporting Donald Trump. At school, other kids made sure that they knew that their dad was not liked in their household. Some of them wondered aloud if something bad was going to happen to us. These are the words of Eric Erickson.
Eric is, of course, radio host and commentator. The book is called Before You Wake, and he joins us now.
Eric, you're one of my heroes, brother. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
So, Eric, tell me, first of all, so for anybody who doesn't know, tell us about the twin health crisis that you were facing.
So I just assumed it was the stress of last year back in April, having protesters at the house and my kids yelled at in the grocery store. And I was having a harder and harder time breathing. My chest was tight and went into the hospital and got wheeled into an ICU unit, not expected to make the night. My lungs had filled up with blood clots, blood oxygen less than 90%, dying. And literally, as they're pushing me into a CT scan to scan my lungs, doctors from the Mayo Clinic called my wife and told her they think she might have a rare form of cancer. She needed to come out for a lung biopsy. And sure enough, She has a rare, incurable genetic form of lung cancer. And so we're going through all of that as we're having protesters at our house, armed guards protecting us, my kids coming home from school crying with other kids saying, I'm going to get shot for not supporting the president. Their parents hate me. It was a 2016 was a rather miserable year in the Erickson household.
So you started to write this book because you didn't die. And you wanted your kids to know the truth about you.
Yeah, I did. And I really did think for a while when it happens to if Christy and I, if something happens to us. I remember walking into the bedroom one night and told Christy I just did not know that I was going to survive the week. And she just burst out crying that she'd made a deal with God. One of us had to survive for the kids. And I thought I need to actually sit down and write to my kids. What do I want you to know about your family, about God, about faith, and what are your favorite recipes in case something happened to your parents? How would you make the cinnamon rolls I make for you? And it all wound up being a book that's part cookbook and part life lessons and part biography. Because, you know, I'm mindful if my kids were to Google me tomorrow, there's a joke at our kids' school that I'm the one parent they're not allowed to use as an example for Google because God knows what they'll find on me. Some of it's true and some of it not. And I want my kids to know the true things, the bad things I've done, the good things I've done, and why I want them to believe in God, so on the other side of eternity we'll see each other again.
Eric, what did this going through all this teach you about prioritization?
Oh, that, you know, my life involves politics on radio, on The Resurgent, on TV, and I want my kids to understand that I think it is far more important for them to have a relationship with their next-door neighbor, whether they agree politically or not, than to be online yelling at people about the politics of the day, that there's so much more to life than politics.
You actually wrote something. I'm trying to find it here. I read it this morning again about how you just the social media thing is just you feel is a real problem.
Yeah, you know, I think Twitter in particular brings the worst out in all of us, myself included. You know, there's that scene in the Bible where Jesus, I'm actually in seminary right now, we studied this 2 weeks ago, where the possessed man comes to Jesus and he says to the demon, possessing, what is your name? And the demon says, Legion. And Christ throws the legion into the swarm of pigs, which run down the bank and drown in the lake. And I think what the Bible leaves off after that is that after the pigs have drowned and the demons get out of the pigs, they all got Twitter accounts. And you see that so much online. I mean, it brings out the worst in all of us. And I swear Hell's Army is on Twitter. And I want my kids to get their sense of self-worth by being ethical people created in the image of God, not because they got a bunch of retweets or likes on Instagram or Facebook.
I wanted to quote a couple of things. I always try to forgive. As I've gotten older and dumber, I've come to realize how much more I need forgiveness and how often people refuse to forgive. First of all, give me that.
Well, you know, there's a lot less grace in the world today. And I've done dumb things in my life, things I regret. And I find 10 years later, people still want to throw them in my face of, mm-hmm. You're no moral authority on this because look at what you did 10 years ago. And I can't tell someone to get over that, but I can get over it myself with other people. I can show forgiveness to other people who have done good and not still define them by the bad thing they've done. I think more and more in this world, people want to define you by the worst thing you did, no matter how long ago it is. Mm-hmm. And if we do that to each other, we have no incentive to improve as people because we're always going to be defined by that.
So, Eric, I was up in Nantucket at a conference, a summit, and I was
popular.
Yeah,
is that the word you're looking for?
Yeah, I was pretty popular up there.
Nantucket.
Yeah, and so I was up there for 3 days, and it had been a horrible, horrible experience. And there were some other things that were happening in my life at the time. It broke me. It broke me in half. That weekend was just a really hard weekend for me. And I had to speak on Sunday a second time to this crowd. And I got up in the morning and I was in the bathroom in front of the mirror. And I was on my knees when my wife came in. And she said, honey, what's wrong? And I said, mercy. I don't believe there's mercy anymore. And I've never understood the plea for mercy more than I do right now. It's a remarkable gift that I think Facebook and Twitter, you're exactly right, will never allow you to move forward.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's why we have an obligation to do it. And, you know, I decided a couple of years ago, I kept getting asked to give Sunday sermons in small churches around Georgia, because I talk about culture and faith on my radio show, and decided I'd probably ought to go to seminary, which was the greatest thing I did. Although the moment I went, I stopped getting the invitations to preach when I found out where I was going to seminary. But I love it. And we spend a lot of time on this topic. And one of the things that's made me appreciate is that our ways aren't their ways. And we need to be a light in the world. And whether you're a person of faith, you're a conservative, however you view yourself, you need to be a light in the world. And you start by showing grace and extending mercy to people who don't do it to you, and show that your way actually is a way forward. And I don't know that there's enough of that. And I fear that as conservatives look more and more towards political solutions to spiritual problems, yeah, that they're going to become more tribal like that as well, and not show grace and mercy the other way. And those of us who do, I think, stand out more and more. And that's not a prideful thing. It's a humble thing, knowing that you've got to be willing to extend the hand to people who don't want to extend the hand to you. But you still got to make yourself do it.
It's amazing. It is almost... If I ask a crowd of Christians, how many believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ? They'll all raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
If I say, will you really follow it? They'll all raise their hand. But even Peter denied God, denied Jesus three times. Even Peter. Worse, you know, Judas sold him out.
Right.
I'm not sure how many of us are even at Peter's level, because it's not that hard to offer mercy and forgiveness to people who are saying and doing horrible things to you or to your country or whatever, and trying to have compassion and forgiveness and empathy for them. And yet so many Christians see that as a sign of weakness.
Well, you know, one of the things I wrote in the book for my kids, and I hope one day they will read this, is that my wife has a very hard time with grudges, and she will admit it. And I have told her before, as I wrote in the book, that if you can't forgive someone, you're saying that your conscience was pricked more than Jesus's, who, having been beaten, tortured, bloodied, and nailed to a cross, on a cross before he died, said, "Forgive them." If you can't forgive someone for slighting you after what they did to him, and he said, "Forgive them," you're saying you were abused more than he was on the cross. So
she must love that when you say that to her.
Oh yeah. Let me tell you, it puts me in the doghouse. But yeah, sometimes you got to make your wife feel guilty, because she's making me feel guilty every day. She guilted me into buying her a Harley. She said, "I've got cancer. You have to buy me a motorcycle." So I had to.
Eric, if God forbid something does happen to you, you know your kids will obviously read this book. But if everything goes okay, at what point do you become angry at them for not reading it while you're alive? What is the age?
Maybe when they're in their 20s. My 12-year-old has tried twice, and she can't get past the introduction.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good line. At least they know where their line is to be a good kid.
So, Eric, I have been concentrating lately on what matters most in my own life. And I think we can all get to this point to where you say, this is garbage. I mean, what I'm doing maybe is garbage. What I'm thinking is garbage. What I'm pursuing is garbage, whatever. And you start to look and say, what matters most? You're in a political position. What matters most?
I always fall back on the first question in the shared catechism, with Catholic and Protestant. What's the chief end of man? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. And it doesn't matter what I do in life, as long as I think I'm glorifying God, then it's okay. And I'm in politics, and I spend a lot of time trying now to write about conforming my politics to my faith instead of my faith to my politics. And it has made it much more difficult for me in life to have that realization I have to do that. But I think as long as I'm doing that, I'm okay. And people may hate me, they may stop listening to me or stop reading me, but I think I'm in the right place.
How has that manifested itself with you?
It makes it much more difficult for me to find the easy solution, whether it's on immigration or crime or anything else. There are lots of easy solutions when you abandon your faith. And when you have your faith, there's a more difficult balancing act. But I'm challenged by it. And I like that challenge of doing that every day. And honestly, I sleep well at night. And there is an art to sleeping well at night. And part of it is understanding there are real priorities and politics isn't one of them.
Eric Erickson, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Glenn Beck.
It's weird. Eric and I are on kind of the same path right now, and I don't know if you're joining me on this journey or finding this important in your own life of just finding out what is meaningful. I just want to do something meaningful in my own life. And I want to be part of good. And I want to raise my kids right and do what matters. And that's it. Today I was reading something, 27 Rules for Gentlemen to Live By. And I'm like, I don't have any of these. I'm going to go over these tomorrow. The height of incivility is paying more attention to your wife, to your watch. These are old. Your watch, your pipe, or your notebook than to the person you're having a conversation with. Even if you're bored and tired, make no sign of it.
That one's been completely abandoned. That's the Fourth Amendment of this list.
This is not happening. Never interrupt a speaker. Sometimes even a demand for specification may sound impolite. It's even worse. Exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, don't cut another person's speech short, even if you already know the story that's being told.
That's the worst one. When you're telling a story in a specific way.
Yeah, I got it. I know.
Okay.
Don't try to prove your point. Number three, don't try to prove your point by raising your tone of voice, insolent behavior, or put-downs. Endeavor to always be gallant and modest, free of any dictatorial attitudes. We are so far away from all of these.
Oh, my gosh. It's not even close.
No, I mean, not even close. I'm only on three.
Yeah, think of social media in this context.
Oh,
my gosh.
So I want to go through these tomorrow. We'll start in hour number one. I want to go through these tomorrow and see if we can actually try to live these. Just try to live these for a week, a day.
Oh, gosh. I was going to go hope for the end of the show, maybe?
End of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, how difficult would this be? Never, unless you're asked to do so, talk about your own business or your own profession. Devote little time and little attention to yourself. I'm out of business. I'm out of business.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, if it isn't my good friend Pat Gray, who is...
It is.
Mm-hmm. Who does the radio program on the Blaze Radio Network immediately following this program.
What's it called?
It's called Pat Gray Unleashed.
Oh, what a great name.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It is. I was thinking about Unchained. But mm-hmm. I thought it would be better to go with Unleashed.
Yes, too many connotations there.
Yeah.
We would have run into.
Yeah. And so what that's done for me is I can never say the name of Pat's show because I always think it is Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's Unleashed.
It's not, right.
But he has been unleashed and he's got a lot to say and he's here.
Especially
to
today.
What do you have?
Well, I've finally developed courage enough.
Oh, boy.
To admit that I was sexually harassed by Harvey Weinstein.
No, I didn't know that you were even around Harvey Weinstein.
I think it's time. Well, I don't like to talk about this time of my life very much.
Right.
But I was an incredibly promising key grip and best boy for a long time.
You were?
In Hollywood.
And with Harvey Weinstein, a key grip and a best boy
exactly,
might take on different
and that's what he thought.
Right.
And when I rebuffed his advances, right. I never worked in Hollywood again.
Really?
Either best boying or key gripping. Neither
really?
One.
Wow.
The best boy jobs were the first to go.
Mm-hmm.
It was heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it amazing that...
This might be taken as a little insensitive.
Absolutely. It should be, because I can't believe that for 30 or 40 years, everybody in Hollywood covered up for this guy. Every major star knows, every producer knows, every comedian knows. They all know that he's a douchebag, and they do nothing about it until now. Until now.
Incredible.
Why?
Incredible.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie... Both involved, by the way, with Brad Pitt, who was informed.
By the way, Brad Pitt said with Angelina Jolie, and he's on record apparently at the time, that he went and confronted.
I think it was Paltrow when he was dating Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
So that would be Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
He
yeah.
said he was going to give him a beating, a Missouri beating yeah. or whooping or
so,
something.
So, I mean, he is a guy who did stand up.
Why didn't he go public with that? Just to, you know, save other women.
But here's, yeah. but here's the problem. Because we were talking about this, and we didn't get in depth on it, but I mean, let's be honest with each other, not on sexual harassment or anything else, but did we not all know, and let's be honest, that Roger Ailes, we dodged a bullet. We're the only ones to walk out of Fox News that wasn't completely destroyed by Roger Ailes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was that's different than sexual harassment.
No, hang on just a second. Hang on. I'm going to bring it back around. You and I, we all know there are many things that we believe that we shall never say, but we shall never say the things that we do not believe when it comes to Roger Ailes or Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We have spent years until he died. We spent years avoiding and trying to tell the truth, but not pissing him off, because he will blackball you and destroy you.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, you want to be careful, right?
Yeah, you just want to be careful.
There's no need to create additional enemies.
Correct. If we would have known something about sexual abuse, we all would have said
right,
it.
And
I have no doubt.
There is a reason there to create an enemy, right?
Yes, it is worth
stepping up for something
like that. Okay, but hang on just a second. Mm-hmm. We're also a suicidal bunch. I mean, how many times have we...
Pretty stupid, yeah.
Yeah, we're dumb as a box of rocks. How many times have we destroyed our career because we're like, you know what, I got to tell the truth on this, okay? Most people
are not...
We
spent 2 years doing that.
Yeah,
and,
most people...
It was fun.
Right, most people don't do that.
That's
okay?
true, yes.
So, when you're Harvey Weinstein and you're going up, you're just... Even if you're Gwyneth Paltrow, you're alone. How alone did we feel when we went and we said what we've said in the last 2 years? Even though people from behind the scenes will say, you're right, you keep it up. I'm not doing it, but you keep it up. Oh, really? Thanks.
Although we were alone on that quest, but I don't think these actors and actresses are alone. Because everybody knows and everybody felt the same thing.
No, but it's the same thing, Pat. It's the same thing. People... You know, and I know there are people that did not want to take the stand that they did on the air, but they took that stand because they were being told by their corporation, you won't have a job.
Yes.
One person lost their job over it, and it's Michael Medved. But people were told, you're not going to have a job, and so they acquiesced. That's the same thing, just a smaller version of it, but it's the same thing. So if Gwyneth Paltrow would have come out, it would have been her word, and I can guarantee you none of the other women would have come out at the time because they wouldn't want to be alone.
How about the Ben Afflecks, though, who knew the whole time and now are all of
a sudden
outraged?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Stop it. Don't try to play that.
He's not a good Batman either.
That's a really good point. That's maybe even a better point.
Okay, good.
Yeah, Ben Affleck is just not a good guy. You kind of wonder about.
He does seem that way.
Yeah. What's her name?
Jennifer Garner.
Oh, you know, we never talked about meeting her. I met her.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Was it good?
Very nice to you and your family.
She was the most gracious woman I think I've ever run into.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. She was.
And that was in, was that the Nantucket thing?
Yeah. So she was there, and I'm missing Cheyenne.
Your daughter.
All of a sudden, my daughter, okay, who's a huge fan of Jennifer Garner. And so I'm kind of looking around, and she's gone for a while. I just think she has to go potty. No, I turn around and I see her over there just commanding an audience with Jennifer Garner. And I'm
wow.
like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, so I walk up behind Jennifer, and I don't introduce myself to her or anything. And I just walk behind her, and I give a dad stare to my daughter, and I point to her like, get away from her.
Get away from the A-lister.
Would you stop it? And she looks at me and she says, Dad, it's Jennifer Garner. And I said, I know. Hello, Jennifer. I'm really sorry. Come on, honey. It's time to go. Leave. But she's going to get me. Can we get a picture? And I'm like, oh, dear God, stop this. And so she got, and Jennifer was so nice. She was like, no, let's get a picture. She was so nice. She wow. tolerated my daughter for like probably 8 minutes.
Wow.
With a smile on her face. Okay.
That's awesome.
And you know, it wasn't hard, but that happens to people like that all the time. And they
sure?
want to
oh, yeah.
chew their arm off to get out of it.
Uh-huh.
And so I just looked at her. I said, I'm really sorry, Jennifer. Thank you so much. So we leave. 3 hours go by. I'm having dinner, and I'm having dinner with Jennifer Garner and Dick Cavett and the president of Rwanda. And
this is exactly
this is
my
literally
lunch
the
yesterday.
President of Rwanda.
Yeah. It was fascinating. But anyway, so I walk in and
weird circles. You see,
Jennifer,
you
I know. Seen, right? And so Jennifer is standing there, and I just kind of stop because she's talking to somebody in this hallway that I have to kind of go through to get to the table. And so I stop because I don't want to see her again because I like her and I don't mm-hmm. want anything wrecked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm always you know like I mean? That with celebrities. I don't want them
right.
to ruin my
yeah,
impression,
please,
yeah,
just
impression
don't.
Of them.
So she doesn't stop talking, and my wife is like, please, can we just go so we can sit down? I'm like, yes. So I walk up and I said, excuse me. And she said, oh, hi. And I said, I kind of look around like, me?
You're
saying
to me?
Hi to me? And I said, hi. I said, may I just say something to you? I can't believe how gracious you were to my children today. And she said, Mary and Cheyenne. Oh, they were so nice. You remembered my daughter's names 3 hours later. She was like, oh, they were so nice. It was
impressive.
So nice to talk to them. Blah, blah, blah. She was so gracious.
That's why I have a Capital One credit card, because of that interaction. I had to get one because she sold me on it.
Yeah, she's capable. She's capable of selling things. Yeah,
she is. So I don't understand the Ben Affleck connection there.
Yeah, I don't
because
either.
Because he does not seem to be like a good guy.
It seems, you know, if you read the front of the tabloids as you walk past on your way to your checkout stand, it seems like he was a real big dirtbag to her. You know, drinking, carousing, gambling, gambled away a lot of their money. He just seems like a dirtbag. And she seems sweet and innocent. A lot like the Whitney Houston, Bobby Brown thing when that first came around. They don't match.
Whitney
Although Whitney
didn't.
Wound up matching better than
they
we
did.
Yeah.
At the end,
they
wound up matching.
Didn't wasn't the yeah. one who I would have been trying to get Cheyenne away from because of embarrassment. I would have been like, no, don't put that in your nose.
Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up in just a few moments on the Blaze Radio and TV Network. You can subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud and all those places, as well as theblaze.com/TV.
Thank you, Pat. Also, I'm going to get nothing but heat and grief today. I just tweeted something in response to the president.
Oh, no.
With all of the fake news coming out of NBC and their networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? bad for country. You know, Mr. President, what's bad for the country is the president of the United States saying perhaps we should get involved with a free press and obstruct them. This is what the Constitution was written for. They have a right to broadcast. They have a right. First of all, they don't have a broadcast license.
NBC doesn't.
No, the affiliates do. But the you have to challenge the you know the local affiliates,
which is NBC, not what he's talking about.
That's not what he's talking about. He doesn't even understand that they don't have a license, and they do have a right to be wrong. They have a right. I don't agree with NBC. I think they've been shameful, and they've been shameful for a very long time. But who else are you going to shut down? Really, they're the ones with fake news. I mean, I stand for the right for Alex Jones to be able to broadcast, and there is no more fake news than him. But I don't want to see him run out of the public square. You cannot start telling people what they can and cannot say.
There's a an interesting part of this document I once read. It was the first thing they listed under this amendment section.
Oh, yeah, but the amendments never mean anything. Those are like changes to your iTunes agreement.
Oh, really? Yes. Yeah. You just click OK.
You just click OK.
Agree.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's, look, that is, we have fought how many years? We have fought the left trying to shut down talk radio for 30 years.
Do not go down this road.
How do you think it's going to be used by the next president?
Yes.
How do you think this, you can't, I mean.
You must stand for principles because this, as I said to the left, your guy is going to get out, and the next guy you may not agree with. You don't want him to have all this power. Don't do this. I'm warning those on the right. Do not go down this road. You must stand for the Constitution and the First Amendment, and the only speech that needs protection is the speech you despise. He's wrong. It's dangerous. Don't go over the cliff.
Glenn Beck.